All right. I'd like to call to order the February 1st, 2024 meeting of the Health, Human Services, and Housing Committee. I just want to first thank everybody for being here. We have a number of new members on the committee, which I'm very, very excited about, as well as some familiar faces. For those that have sat on committees that I've chaired in the past, I tend to try and be kind of no nonsense and just jump right into it. Whenever we are having discussion, I always will defer to members of the committee first, then any other legislators that are present. Formally, all conversation with guests, which includes our department heads, should flow through the chair. It's something that I've been pretty loose about and will be pretty loose about, but I will enforce that if there's, you know, as things get more contentious, and then it won't just be enforced for the contentious conversations, it'll be enforced for everything. And it's just meant to make everyone I'd rather have any animosity directed towards me than crosstalk that creates any animosity, which honestly in this committee hasn't been a huge issue. I think we've done pretty good at it. I want to, for those that have been on this committee in the past, I just want to mention that I'm going to read the resolutions in a slightly different way than we have in the past, the format that I'm going to follow going forward. And I tried to do this last year and we decided to hold off on it, but basically I'm going to read the resolution, we're going to discuss it, and then I'm going to take a motion to adopt the resolution. So that way, if we take no action, you know, it's not, we don't need the motion on the table until we've actually had discussion. Does anyone have any questions about that? It'll flow. It'll make sense. And those that weren't here last year, you don't even know how it's different, so it'll be fine. So with that, I am going to jump into resolutions. We have one resolution that we're going to take out of order tonight. Those that are new to the committee, just as an FYI, I always try and group the resolutions based on the department heads having all of their resolutions together and helping them not have to wait for lots of discussion that isn't relevant to them. So that's what we're doing here by taking resolution 30 first. So this is the only resolution that relates to the Department of Veterans, Office of Veterans Services. And so the rest of the resolution packet is in the correct order to help the department heads keep everything tidy. So I'm going to read resolution 30 and we're going to jump right into it. So resolution 30, amending the 2024 Ulster County budget to accept additional funding from the New York State Office of Mental Health for the Dwyer Veteran Peer-to-Peer Support Program through the Department of Mental Health. I'm going to defer to Director Cosopoli to give us a bit of an overview and then we'll move into the session.
All right, thank you very much, Chair. I appreciate you moving it up and everybody else. New legislators, Mark Cosopoli, Director of Veteran Services. I've been director for 4 years now. This program is rather unique. It's a state-funded program and comes down, and if you see what it's called, it says Veteran Peers in there. It's more casually called Vet to Vet. You might have heard that. And it's peer mentoring. It's veterans who have social working degrees, who are also trained as peer mentors, working with other veterans who are facing those emotional and mental health issues that you know, they can be the first stop to really commit to helping stop veteran suicide. This is an extremely important program. It's grown to every county and state. We've been strong with it for the last couple of years. And you know, if I could provide any other background, let me know. If you need anything else from me, let me know. And I always offer up an opportunity for you to come visit our office and do a mission briefing, and, you know, really what we do for our veterans. Anytime you'd like, just reach out. We can schedule something and maybe do it together.
Thank you so much. Any questions from the committee for Dr. Cosopoli? Any comments, points of discussion? I'll point out that this increase does not include an increase in the county share, so that's always nice. If there's no further discussion, then I will take a motion to adopt.
Motion to adopt resolution 30.
Moved by Legislator Collins. Second. Second by Legislator Harmon. Any discussion, or let's see, do we need to do discussion at this point? No. All right, I'll call a question. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Aye. All right. It's unanimous. Thank you so much. And of course, The point of this is that the department heads can leave, and so I don't begrudge anyone who leaves after their resignation. Everyone, that's the whole point of taking them out of order. We realize that you just worked a full day and you're here still. And with that, we'll go into the resolutions as they are ordered in our packet. Resolution number 36, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $70,000 entered into by the county with ConnectAmerica.com LLC for the Office for the Aging. And I will defer to Director Copenhaver to give us, is she here? No. Deputy Secretary Contreras, do you have any background on?
So Connect America, this is a contract, there's somebody at the Office of Aging who connects senior resources. They've been there for many, many years, so they're really well-versed on all the different county agencies and also nonprofits. So it's basically a resource manager.
Any questions from the committee?
Yes, I want to make sure I know what I'm seeing. So we're increasing this budget by $50,000. Is that what's happening here? I don't quite understand the, again, I'm new, so excuse my ignorant questions.
Sorry, I'm just trying to get to
the. So we're extending the fund, extending the term of the agreement and increasing funding.
Okay.
So I believe that this is just increasing, it is increasing the maximum cost of the specific contract, but only by extending the term of the contract, not by increasing the rate.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you very much for explaining that.
Yep. Yeah, because it, yeah, exactly. And it also does look like it's retroactive as well, the amended terms. This would have ended at the end of, oh no, I'm sorry. This ends this March. So this is proactive, very proactive. Wonderful job. And it'll renew it and bring it through March of 25.
Okay. Thank you very much.
No, it's a great question, and I encourage everyone to ask questions. Any other comments, questions, or concerns? I'll take a motion to adopt Resolution 36.
Motion.
Moved by Corcoran, second by McCullough. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? 36 is unanimous. Do we know if Sue is coming, or do we? Because I could also wait, but I don't think any of our resolutions are. I think there's only two, and I don't think they're very controversial. I could be wrong about that. I don't want to color anyone. If anyone is planning controversy, I don't mean to diminish your opinion.
If we could wait a few minutes, I don't know that she's not coming, but I'll
text her. Okay. Do you want me to hold? We're on her next resolution. I'm either going to hold it or I'm going to move forward. Okay, so I'm going to hold Resolution 37 for the end. We're going to go to Resolution number 15, I believe. Yep, Resolution number 15, authorizing the County of Ulster to submit an application and assurances to the New York State Housing Trust Fund as part of the New York State Homes and Community Renewal for the Plus One ADU program in partnership with RUTCO and various municipalities through the Department of Planning. And I will defer to Director Doyle to give us a brief overview.
Thank you, Chair. For introductions for people that don't know me, my name is Dennis Doyle. I'm Planning Director for the County Planning Board. The ADU Plus One, or the Plus One ADU program, ADU stands for Accessory Dwelling Units. The county is currently implementing a $1.75 million program for this project, and we're proposing to apply for additional money. The ADU program is designed to help low and moderate income homeowners stay in their housing by creating additional apartment units. It provides a grant for those apartment units up to $125,000. The county has funding for approximately 14 or 15 of these units right now. We're joined with RUPCO and the City of Kingston as joint applicants for this program. We have over 81 applications that came in. The funding round two was essentially announced, and we were able to essentially apply with a different set of partners. So we're going to partner with the municipalities relative to those that have the most applications, and those are Helenville, Rosendale, Ellenville, and there's two others. New Paltz is one, and I forgot the fourth one. The the amount of funding we're requesting is $2 million in the resolution. Given what we just had a recent conversation with the grant source as of yesterday, and they are urging us, even though there's a $2 million cap on what you can apply for, they're urging us to apply for more money. So we've had a conversation about how we can structure that application to apply for additional funds, and we're going to apply for a total of $4 million for that money. So what I would ask you to do is, I don't believe you can amend the resolution because it went through the Economic Development Committee as is, but I'm going to request that you consider the fact that on the floor of the legislature to allow us to apply for up to $4 million of funding for this program. We've had conversations with the communities and conversations with the sub-recipient, which is RUPCO, in terms of their ability to administer that, and there everyone seems to be on board. That would be a total, if awarded, that would be a total of almost $6.7 million engaged in ADU construction.
Thank you. Any questions? Legislator McCullough.
Out of 81 applications, only a selected amount of spots. Is it a criteria, or how do you decide who gets and who doesn't?
It's generally based on the applications that are completed. It's also looked at the ones that essentially are the easiest to build, particularly with respect to the availability of water and sewer. So the availability of water and sewer makes things a lot simpler than if we have to have a conversation about well capacities and septic capacities.
Okay. Any other questions? I think it makes sense to wait until we're on the floor to make that amendment. I'm happy to move that, but just make sure to give us a heads up beforehand on how you want it amended.
Sure.
So with that, we can move forward with Resolution 15 in its current state, which is fine. Can I have a motion to adopt Resolution Number 15? Yeah, moved by Collins.
Second.
Second by Lopez. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Resolution Number 16, confirming appointment of members to the Community Services Board. Looks like we've got two members. These are, I believe, reappointments?
They're
new appointments.
They're new.
Okay. Commissioner McDonald, do you want to just give us a very, very brief?
Sure. So good evening. My name is Karen McDonald. I'm the commissioner for the Department of Mental Health. New York State mental hygiene law requires that departments of mental health have a designation of local governmental unit in order to draw down state funding to pay for services on the local level. As the LGU, we're also responsible to have a community services board that acts sort of in an advisory manner for us. It is a board of interested residents that participate in the meetings and bring to us any questions or concerns or suggestions, or they help us develop our local services plan. So these members are volunteer their time, and there's a process in which the county sort of vets each board member to determine if they would be appropriate to serve as our advisory board. And so these are two applications that you have before you now for additional board members. We're responsible to have, I believe, 15 members. The expectation is that there's a healthy board for good discussion and diverse discussion, and that some of the board members are also recipient of services or are a family member that also receives services. So these are two applications.
And we do have, committees that kind of fall under that. There are subcommittees to this board, and so what we have tonight is we have Resolution 16, which is appointing both of these members to the Community Services Board, and then we have two resolutions that follow, one appointing one of them to the Mental Health Subcommittee, one appointing the other to the Substance Abuse Subcommittee. So that's what the next three resolutions are. So is there any questions, comments, or concerns from the committee? Then I'll entertain a motion to adopt Resolution Number 16.
Mm-hmm.
Right, moved by Legislator Harmon, seconded by Legislator Corcoran. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Right. Resolution number 17, confirming appointment of a member to the Community Service Board's Mental Health Subcommittee. This is for Stephanie Kresser to be, who we just put on the committee, to be appointed to the subcommittee. Any questions, comments, or concerns? I'll take a motion to adopt Resolution 17. Moved by Corcoran and seconded by Lopez. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Last one, Resolution number 18, confirming appointment of a member to the Community Service Board Substance Abuse Subcommittee. This is confirming Amy Nisa to the subcommittee. Any questions, comments, or concerns? I would entertain a motion to adopt Resolution number 18. Moved by McCullough and seconded by Harmon. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Resolution number 19, amending capital project number 598 through ARFA, Community Wellness Hub Crisis Stabilization Center renovations, City of Kingston, amending the 2024 capital fund budget to the Department of Public Works through Buildings and Grounds. And is Deputy Executive Harrison the best that he gives us kind of an update on this? I'm not sure who did, or Commissioner Donald, or?
I can start. So this is the Crisis Stabilization Center, which we've been working on for a long time now. This was passed by, this was a resolution that was passed by the legislature in 2022, I believe. And then several months after that, we bought a property at 368 Broadway, which was a location to have a distribution center. So I have we have Jolene here, who's our director of special projects, and she's actually the same person. Mm-hmm. Her main job is to make sure the Crisis Stabilization Center gets off the ground, and she's been working very closely with architects, designers, and the Department of Public Works, and Department of Mental Health, and the provider, after some of the things get off the ground.
Thank you. Anyone I haven't met, Jolene Darby. Health. For everyone that heard this spiel at the ARPA committee, I'm sorry, I repeat myself. So I've had experience in the past helping open and operate the Crisis Stabilization Center in Dutchess, so I have a really good understanding of program services and now the licensing process, which OMH and OASIS has agreed to license the program, so it's self-sustaining. So I apologize again. I gave out all of my drawings for the Stabilization Center. If anyone wants to take a look. Nothing's changed. It's up to you if you want to no problem. So a little bit of background of what the services are going to look like. The center itself is around 6,000 square feet. It's going to have different group rooms, some for youth, some for adults. They're going to be separated, which is necessary for licensure, which you'll see in the drawings that they're in separate spaces. There'll also be a separate access point for police drop-off so that if the police are interacting with people and they don't necessarily need to go to the emergency room or they don't necessarily need to be arrested for anything but they're in crisis, they can get dropped off securely at the center, separate from youth. So you will see on the bottom right corner here, that is a separate entrance for the police officers. You have adult rooms here and you have youth rooms over here on this side. The top right corner, you'll see these little chairs over here. That's a substance use room, so people can come in and active detox, and they can be induced with medication within the first, well, they'll be up there to up to 24 hours. So they'll be induced with medication on site and overseen by nursing medical staff, and then from there they'll be referred out to different services. So that might look like an inpatient detox or an outpatient detox from another provider in the community. It could also mean outpatient mental health services, clinic appointments. So a big goal of the center is really to work with other providers that if a call comes in from the crisis center that someone gets services very quickly once they leave because they came in crisis. So that's going to be a lot of work for our department and marketing and with the police to make sure that everyone's on the same page that someone should get services within 48 hours or connected to a service after they leave. That's 48 hours is long, we would hope right away. But they can stay up to 24 hours while they're there. They can also shower, do their laundry, clean up. A lot of people we might see are going to be homeless. They're going to come in, and rather than engaging someone in that state of mind right in that moment, we'd like to offer them some food, a shower, and then they can work with either a CASAC, a social worker, a nurse, or a peer to have a discussion about what they're willing to accept as far as resources. So that's kind of an overview of the center. It will be operated by People USA on the first floor. We did put out the RFP for construction. You'll see there's a couple different vendors in there, HVAC, plumbing, and whatnot, at Sound or Witzlaw. We are hoping that once construction is started, it will be completed within 6 months, if not less. So that is the ultimate goal.
What floor is this on?
That's on the first floor. So at 368, Department of Mental Health has moved to the fourth. We have the third floor is currently vacant. The second floor is access mental health urgent care and Samadhi for substitute services, so which is great because on the first floor then will be the crisis center and we can easily refer to our different providers that will hopefully be close by and we could walk people to the elevator up a floor, possibly connect them if they're willing to.
So I'm imagining that better access to crisis intervention will mean higher need for continual care services. Is that a need that at this point can be met? Like, is there space?
So we've had conversations with providers understanding that once this service starts, like we said, we want that access to be quick. I think we're going to get a really good understanding of what that need is and where those gaps are once this service arises. Right now, we don't have inpatient beds in Kingston, so all of our county residents are going to, and we had just had a conversation with the hospital recently, a majority of them are going to Valhalla. They are not even making it over to Mid-Hudson Regional. So that is one thing that will be reduced. We're hoping that they might be engaged with services already, but coming into the center will help them get re-engaged. So they might not have had to do that. So the purpose of the staff at the center would be to, they can look up the state systems and they can see, okay, they have a case manager, they've already worked with this provider. It might just be re-engaging with them, or they might have fallen through the cracks, call the provider, and hopefully the goal is in real time that provider comes and meets that person to get them reinstated in services. So I think the answer to your question is, I think that there probably won't be every provider that can meet the capacity of maybe what the need is, but I think once we start seeing people come in, we'll have a better understanding of the next step services that we're looking at.
We have a foundation of outpatient treatment services right now. To know whether the capacity is going to explode, we won't know until the center opens and determine if we're able to make those connections quickly. But for right now, we have a number of providers that we can connect for outpatient mental health services, outpatient substance use disorder services, partial hospitalization. Like, we have a full array. But you're right, we're going to be looking for people that we don't necessarily know in our system right now, and will we have enough to support them? I'd like to say yes, but we won't know until the center opens. But it would be a matter of expanding on fundamental services that we already have.
Right. And I think it also goes on, speaks to a lot of training that will happen with the staff at the center, that we can't just stop in Ulster County. You are going to see people coming down from Albany or an outside counties possibly seeking this service because there isn't an intensive stabilization center in surrounding areas. A lot of that, what was funded, is supportive. So that medication piece and that expanded staffing pattern is not going to look the same as it would in Ulster County. So it's like a whole health approach, really. The other centers probably aren't going to look like that. The other thing, as far as my experience in working in centers such as this, if there isn't a capacity within the county, the center itself is responsible for seeking outside the county as well, and there are numerous rehabs. I mean, that's not the ultimate goal unless someone prefers to leave the county for services, but there is, it doesn't stop within Ulster. If someone wants to go to Pennsylvania or somewhere else, you can link them to those services.
So the idea is just that this center then becomes like the top line of triage for places like Access for people to be funneled into, right? Because, like, if you're not in crisis, it's a very, very, very long wait.
Right. But also, so, there's no wrong door when you're coming into the center. So someone might not need medication or inpatient or in their that seriousness of crisis. They might just need that peer support. Mm-hmm. So state psych hospitals closed down, a lot of people, their go-to was to go to the emergency room every time they felt unwell or there was an inconvenience and they felt uncomfortable. They would not get admitted. They would just be there for hours and it would cost money and then they would leave. So even if the person doesn't need such an extensive type of service with the medication and the next step and referrals, because maybe they're connected to a wide array of services, they would still go in and get that peer support one-on-one, which is totally accessible to them. And they might not then need that the hospital avoidance, right? They're not going to the ED because they got what they needed as far as coaching.
Let's go to Legislator Collins and then Legislator McCullough.
So you talked about the top right, I think you said it was, is the detox area, is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Just want to, having seen kids go through detox, is this going to work? I mean, they'll take a chair instead of beds.
So They won't be just reclining. So that's a great question. So we are actually working with a furniture provider. We do have one that we feel strongly about for the majority of the space. I do recognize that it's a very uncomfortable situation to be in. We will probably use a different provider for reclining chairs that will be more comfortable with trays and that would be more suitable for someone that's in detox. So I have done a ton of research. Karen and I have done a bunch of meetings as far as last week, getting an idea and feedback of what really looks trauma-informed and doesn't look super hospital-like, but also works for the needs that we're trying to accommodate, which we will have people there overnight, and they're going to not be in a comfortable state. So those chairs turning into beds when necessary. So, yes, they won't just be chairs.
Just taking it one step further, it's actually going to be quite a bit of our funding for that area, for that space. It's the largest area in the center, and it also, because there's medical triage that's happening there as well, we need to be able to invest in the proper infrastructure.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
You said you're 23 and a half hours?
Technically, 23 hours, 59 minutes is what they pay for licensure.
Now, if someone comes and they need your service, what happens after that? If somebody needs your help again, maybe not the next day, but...
They can totally return. So there's two parts to that question. If someone is waiting for a bed that's necessary, that's not an outpatient kind of referral, let's say an inpatient bed, they wouldn't be asked to leave when that 24-hour hits. It really just means that that provider can't bill past those 24 hours, right? So there's two rates that they're going to be able to, and this goes into sustainability as far as down the road. We're really looking at, you know, giving the startup cost to get there and, you know, the construction. So they wouldn't be asked to leave. They would stay there until that bed is available or something is found, right? But if, let's say, they left, they were even referred to a service and it didn't work out, they came back, they would be, the provider, PeopleUSA, would be expected to re-enter that person back into the system and then figure out why it didn't work and then have another conversation and then try again. So as many times as someone needs.
Next, Lady Lopez.
So some of the points that you're making with the idea behind the mobile crisis. Now, are you going to, do you work with mobile crisis units as well? Because to some of your points, that not every crisis is, you know, a law enforcement issue or a medical issue, mm-hmm. and I know that the mobile crisis unit was
right
behind that. Now, do you work together?
So our department does work with the mobile mental health team, but really what we're going to be looking at once we get construction started, a big goal would be, in part of my position, is to connect all of those pieces. Mm-hmm. So their mobile mental health might be out on another call and can't access that a call that comes in right away. Someone would be really encouraged to then come to the center, whether by a family member, mobile mental health, you know, hopefully could drop them off. Police could also drop that person off if they interact with someone. They just need to find their way there, whether it's by foot or by UCAT. A lot of what I've seen is the center in Dutchess is very close to the hospital, so a lot of people actually became very impatient in the hospital and would just walk down the hill at 230 North Road and to the center. I have a feeling that's probably going to happen quite often, and a lot of the traffic that the center is going to see is going to be on foot. But yeah, so a big part of what we're going to be working on is down the road before the center opens is talking to law enforcement so they're comfortable in dropping someone off and they know it's going to be a different experience than what they experience than dropping someone off at the hospital. And then also providers and them understanding what the services are, how they access them, a point of contact. So those are all things that are going to be kind of worked out. But yeah, we will work very closely with them and welcome them into the center to get to know the staff directly, spend time there. I think we're going to probably have a lot of the shared same people that we're going to see.
And depending on the nature of the person's crisis, we may ask the mobile mental health team to go back out. So say they were in the center all day, there was a plan that was set up in place, we may ask the team to go back out and do a follow-up. A lot of what the team does is follow-up on someone having a crisis, beyond the crisis, to make sure that they're sustaining.
Yeah. And I think a big part of this as well, and it's going to transpire, that you're going to see a lot of the school systems utilizing this service as well, because from the experience that I've had, a lot of schools, they don't really have the capacity to assess a child if they're disruptive in school, if they're having a difficult time. A lot of the school systems will then send a child to get assessed by a social worker on site at the center and then communicate back to the school so they have an understanding that they know they got a mental health assessment and they can see where they're at, which is something that, you know, the feedback I've gotten is they haven't experienced this much in the past, and it's helpful for them to figure out how to keep the child safe and welcome them back into the classroom.
Good. I do want to ask a question about the just the financial component to this. Mm-hmm. So we're increasing the capital improvement program.
Yeah.
But it's by an amount that we had budgeted.
So originally there was $3 million put aside for the crisis stabilization center. $2 million of that was used to purchase the property, and a little bit over, I think, $100,000 was used for the architect. We were left with a little bit, and you'll see in the resolution, forgive my numbers, around 700 something thousand of ARPA funding left over. So there was a gap that wasn't allocated to fill the need of the construction. So we had worked with the county attorney's office. We talked to the attorney general's office, as well as OASIS, who gave us the OASIS funding, which you'll see outlined in this resolution, with approval to use these funds to support the center. So it kind of worked out that, you know, we did receive these funds to help a need. We have a high overdose fatality rate, you know, in Ulster County. And so we got approval to use them to fill that gap, which is actually less than what we were originally quoted for as far as construction.
Great. Oh, wonderful. Any other questions? All right. I will entertain a motion to adopt resolution number 19.
Okay.
Moved by Legislator Harmon, seconded by Legislator Lopez. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Resolution number 23, amending the 2024 Ulster County budget to include the transfer of 2023 opioid settlement funding not expended in 2023 through the Department of Mental Health. Commissioner McDonald, do you want to give us a brief overview?
Sure. So Ulster County will be receiving opioid settlement funds through two different bundles, if I can, from OASAS, the New York State Opioid Settlement Fund, and then from the Attorney General's Office. We started to receive some of those dollars, and Jolene had just mentioned that some of the OASAS money is being used to support the build out of the center. But we've started to receive money from the Attorney General's through the Attorney General's office, and we contracted last year for a number of services, but we had to end those contracts. They terminated, their contract end was terminated at 12/31/23, and now we're needing to roll over those funds to continue with those services.
Any questions from the committee, comments, concerns? Legislator Collins?
I'm not sure what the services are.
So there were three different contracts. There was one with LaSalle School for mental health in schools. There was another with Cornerstone to do street outreach. And then there was another one with the Samadhi Center for support of their expansion of their outpatient SUD treatment clinic, and then for the creation of an outpatient detox. And then also the last part of that contract was to support a staff member at their transitional living refuge in Sarbanes.
Any other questions? Yep, Legislator Collins.
A general question may not be appropriate here, but I mean, I like the fact you're getting money from the settlement. I like the fact it's going to opioid crisis situation. Is it making a difference? I mean, our numbers are still not great. And I'm wondering what it is that we can do to help improve the numbers, help reduce the number of deaths in the county. This seems like it's sustaining. It's just not, doesn't seem like it's preventing. So how do we get over this hurdle of continuing to fund crisis as opposed to trying to start prevention and healing? I mean, I'm not sure if I'm saying that well enough or not, but
saying it well.
Thank you.
I'm definitely getting what it is that you're saying. What I will say is that our numbers are definitely not in every life that we reach is horrible. I will say, though, that our fatalities have been declining over the course of the past 2 to 3 years. And though the overdose rates are still astronomical, it's speaking to the harm reduction work. The fact that folks are living past the overdoses is speaking to the work that is being done in a crisis area, in the getting out the community education and really around the harm reduction. So we'd like to see it go down to zero, and that's the direction that we're trying to work in. But I think that we're seeing evidence of what we are putting into the system, attempting to chip away at the crisis.
more question.
Go for it.
So I know other counties have availability for methadone and other treatments that can sustain life. I know that I think we're lacking that in this county.
We actually have a methadone resolution in a few minutes.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, we have I will say that Health Alliance, Westchester Medical Center, as a parent of Health Alliance, has reached out to they've received a grant that will allow for them to expand the methadone. Currently, their capacity is about 250. They're looking to go up to 500 over the course of, 2 to 3 years. So they're restructuring right now their basis so that they will be able to sustain an expansion.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions, comments, or concerns? Any discussion? And I will entertain a motion to approve Resolution 23. Moved by McCullough and seconded by Collins. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Resolution number 24, amending the 2024 budget, Austin County budget, to accept opioid settlement funding through the New York State Office of Addiction Services and Supports, known as OASIS, and authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an amendment to the joint agreement with the City of Kingston and the Department of Mental Health. I will defer to Commissioner McDonald again to give us a very good overview, please.
So this is a part of the OASIS settlement dollars that I referenced before. The City of Kingston, there was $900,000 that was given to the county as a whole, the local governmental unit. And out of that $900,000, there was $12,000 that was specifically to go to City of Kingston based on their impact around the opioid crisis. So this is their $12,000 that we're wanting to be able to get to them.
Any questions? Any comments? Any points of discussion? All right, I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution 24.
Motion.
Moved by Corcoran, seconded by Harmon. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Resolution number 25, amending the 2024 Ulster County budget to accept additional federal block grant funding from the City of Kingston to support the Kingston Mobile Mental Health Team through the Department of Mental Health. And again, Commissioner McDonald, if you want to give us a brief overview.
So the City of Kingston applied for and received a federal block grant, I want to say back in 2022. And what they wanted to do was to have a specific mobile team for the City of Kingston. Mm-hmm. But in not wanting to fragment the services in the county, what they decided to do was to contract with the Department of Mental Health, which will allow for them to gain access to the larger mobile mental health team. So Access Supports for Living operates our mobile mental health team. And in our contract with Access, we have a line for them to have a clinician that works on the Kingston team. So this is just our way of being able to have some clean lines of how money can be exchanged in order to pay for that clinician in the DMH contract.
Any questions from the committee? Comments, concerns, points of discussion? I will entertain a motion to adopt Resolution number 25. Moved by Collins, seconded by Corcoran. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Resolution number 26, amending the 2024 Ulster County budget to accept additional funding from the New York State Office of Mental Health through the Department of Mental Health, and I will again defer to Commissioner McDonald.
The Office of Mental Health instituted a COLA for a specific amount of programs, I think HBCI, ACT, and so for the contracts that have those programs with the Department of Mental Health, we are wanting to accept that money so that it can flow through the department and we can increase the contracts for those particular programs.
And COLA is cost of living adjustment. We're going to see a lot of these working to the Health Committee. Because a lot of our funding is flowed through to the vendors, and there's a lot of personnel costs that pass through the county. And it's always nice to see the contractual expense increase by the exact same amount that the state aid is increasing. So that's nice. Any comments, questions, or concerns from the committee? I'll entertain a motion to adopt Resolution number 26.
I'll move.
Moved by Legislator Harmon, second by Legislator Collins. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Resolution number 27, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute a contract with the New York State Office of Addiction Services and Supports through the Department of Mental Health. Commissioner McDonald, please.
Thank you. So this is the contract that allows for us to get our annual allocation through OSS to pay for prevention services, treatment services, and I believe vocational services through three different vendors in the county. So I believe it's Gateway, Family of Woodstock does prevention, and Gateway again for the treatment services.
Any questions from the committee, comments, concerns? Entertain a motion to adopt resolution number 27.
Motion.
Moved by Corcoran, second by McCullough. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Resolution number 28, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $88,312 entered into by the county with Aster Services for Children and Families through the Department of Mental Health. Commissioner McDonald, I think we're nearing the end, but still a few more for you.
Nearing the end. Hang in there with me. So Aster is one of the contractors that received the additional COLA funds, so we needed to be able to increase their contracted budget.
You could think of this being paired with the resolution prior. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. All right. I have a motion to adopt. Moved by Collins, seconded by Harmon. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Last one for the Department. I believe this is the last one for the Department of Mental Health, is it?
It is.
You all right. Here we go. Resolution number 29, approving the execution of a contract for $100,000 entered into by the county with Health Alliance Hospital, Mary's Avenue Campus, the Department of Mental Health. And Commissioner McDonald, if you could give us a bit of an overview.
Sure. These are county contributions to assist Health Alliance and the operations of the methadone. Many years ago when we were, the county had been providing those services, when the decision was made to let go of that license, we came into an agreement with Health Alliance for them to take on that responsibility. And a part of the agreement was a financial agreement, which was we would help them to support the operations of the program. And that's what these dollars came in.
Legislator Collins.
Do you know how many people the services currently?
225, between 225 and 250.
Will this increase that service level or just maintain it?
These dollars maintain it, but the work outside that Westchester Medical Center is doing in restructuring with their grant will increase it.
Okay, thank you.
Can you or whoever, somebody speak to just if you know, I know there's been some press coverage around the finances of the healthcare provider in question here. Do we have any concerns about these services being something that are going to fall back on the county?
I don't have concerns. Well, the county doesn't have the ability to get the license for a lot of those types of services anyway. Like, even though we had it for methadone, because they have the license now, they wouldn't give an additional one. So we would have to maintain that license with Westchester Medical Center. That's going to need to be done. We can't do partial hospitalization. You know, that's just not something that we would be able to do and sustain in the community. What I will say is that I had a conversation with Todd Hickson, who is one of their vice presidents for behavioral services. And Todd assured us that he felt that the conversations and negotiations that were happening with the governor's office were much more positive. This was as of last Tuesday, moving in a much more positive direction than how it's being depicted in the press. So, you know, it's a little bit of fear mongering, but he was feeling as if we're not as in danger as it is appearing. And even went on as far as to say is that they are building out those beds and with the expectation that they should be done in April. So I can only report what I've been told.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments from the committee? All right, then I'll entertain a motion to adopt resolution number 29. Moved by Legislator Harbin, seconded by Legislator Collins. And all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? We already did resolution number 30, so we're going to skip ahead to resolution number 31. Creating and funding the creating and funding position in the Department of Health, amending the 2024 Ulster County budget. And I'm going to defer on this one to one of the sponsors, Legislator Corcoran.
So, where I wholeheartedly believe that this appointment should be made,
I know we've gone through the budget season already, and this was passed over. So I'm going to continue to have conversations with the executive's office, trying to move forward that the necessity of this position, based on my position as a code enforcement officer and building inspector in the town of Marlboro, the need for these inspectors and these positions to do their jobs in the field and not to be back in the office doing secretarial work, not that I demean that, but to be pulling FOIL requests and not be in the field doing the work they should be doing. But again, I respect the executive's office and the budget process that's just passed, and I'll ask for this to be postponed at the moment.
Would you like to make a motion to postpone?
I will make a motion to postpone.
And a second for the motion to postpone?
Second.
Seconded by Lopez on this one. So there's a motion to postpone on the floor. Any discussion, any further discussion? And I'll just add, you know, as chair of this committee, I personally tend to try and steer the conversation towards deferring to the sponsors when we have a request to postpone. So I'm glad to support that. Any other discussion? Call the question on the motion to postpone. All those in favor of postponing resolution number 31?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, resolution number 31 is postponed for our next meeting. Resolution number 32, amending the 2024 Ulster County budget to reflect funding from the New York State Office, New York State Department of Health for the Epidemiology and Laboratory Capacity COVID-19 Enhanced Detection Grant through the Department of Health. And I will defer to Commissioner Smith to give us an overview.
Yeah, hi, good evening, everybody. I'm Dr. Carol Smith, and I'm the Commissioner of Health for the Department of Health here in Ulster County. This actually is a grant that has come through the State Department of Health to us. It actually originated back in 2020 because of the COVID pandemic. This grant was actually federal funding that passed through the state that came to us in order to basically to respond to the COVID pandemic. The title is a little bit disconcerting because it doesn't really have everything to do with epidemiology and laboratory. They will approve things like we recently gave at their request some masks and COVID test kits to several municipalities throughout the county through this grant. And again, it's a whenever we do get funding of this nature, it's usually on the basis of getting reimbursed for the money that we expend. So there isn't really a set amount yet, but the grant itself is going to sunset, I believe, in June or July of this year. But it has been continually approved for receipt of the funding from the legislature here since 2020, and it's the same type of response to COVID, which still unfortunately is circulating in our community, and we do the best we can to mitigate the pandemic.
Any questions from the committee? Comments, concerns, any discussion? All right, then I'll entertain a motion to adopt resolution number 32.
Motion.
Moved by Corcoran, seconded by McCullough. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Resolution number 33, amending the 2024 Ulster County budget to accept an additional allocation of funds from the New York State Office of Children and Family Services, Division of Child Care Services, the Department of Social Services. And I will defer to Commissioner Iaposi to give us a brief overview.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm Mike Iaposi, Commissioner for the Ulster County Department of Social Services. These are funds from OCSF that were arrived at being added to an allocation that we received last year, so that's why the request to amend increase the original amount by this amount arrived at in connection with this resolution. This is specifically for activities involved in registering daycares. Family of Woodstock is our service provider who does that. They also conduct investigations into inquiries about activities at daycares, monitor complaints, do renewals of licenses. So that's the purpose of these funds.
Any questions from the committee? Comments, any discussion? Then I will ask for a motion to adopt resolution number 33. Moved by Collins, second by Harmon. Excellent. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Resolution number 34, amending the 2024 Ulster County budget to accept allocation of rental assistance program funds from the New York State Office of Temporary and Disability Assistance to the Department of Social Services. Again, I will defer to Commissioner Iacocci to give us a brief overview.
Sure. So this is a program that's funded by OTDA. It's the New York State Supplemental Program, and the allocation that we receive in Ulster County is just under $500,000. It's a program that's being administered by Catholic Charities. We actually had a meeting that the chairperson attended this afternoon. Got a report out on the program is going so far. Based on the allocation with the state budget, we're accepting these funds right now. The purposes were really to provide some additional programming to engage households in our community that might be facing homelessness. So it's really a homelessness prevention program, and Catholic Charities administers this by promoting the program in our community. We promote it through the county, and we specifically try to reach households that are facing the potential of not being able to continue to afford their rent and become homeless. And the program does permit this year's eligibility criteria for both arrears and rent moving forward to be paid. So that's basically a brief description of the program. Seeing good success with respect. We're currently serving about 15 households. The program will be renewed in the next state's fiscal calendar year.
Legislative Collins.
What are the criteria by which people are chosen to participate in this program?
There's a large array of criteria. They basically have to be able to present with a scenario that they're not able to afford the fair market value rent of their property, and that they're facing an inability to continue to pay their residential expenditures. So that's the basic criteria. And then there's also criteria around what their annual income is. But it depends on where they might fall into the ratios between the fair market value of the rent they pay. And those fair market rent values, as we talked about in our meeting this afternoon, are set across the state by zip code. And one of the challenges with administering the program is real market rental values are significantly higher in Ulster County. So many people are facing circumstances with program like this that even with this type of assistance, they still wouldn't be able to afford their rent. So that's been one of the challenges that we have faced, but with hard work and identifying opportunities where there are landlords and tenants who want to continue to be in the relationship they are with regard to renting property, we have been successful finding candidates who are eligible.
Commissioner Collins, and then Herman.
So 15 households throughout the county does not seem a lot compared to the housing crisis that we have. So what can you do to do more of that, or what can you do to actually allow people to be in housing more? And I get that this is doing something, but what's the bigger solution than I think 15 households?
I would respond to that by saying that when one household receive this benefit, it's a major impact in terms of driving at stability for that household to remain in the residential location where they are. And we multiply that by 5 or by 10 or by 15. And just merely helping 10 or 15 households with $10,000 or $15,000 a year, the program actually gets extended fairly quickly. So it's basically one of the programs that, because of the allocation, it's a first come, first serve. Catholic Charities is a member of the Ulster County Continuum of Care. This program is promoted there by probably another 25 housing providers. It's just very challenging to find candidates who fit into the specific criteria, again, because of the fair market rent value discrepancies. But I do have to emphasize, anytime even one household is able to be arrived at being deemed eligible and can remain in the residential location where they are living, it's a major accomplishment.
Yeah.
Is it on this topic?
Yes, follow up on that. Just to be clear, I'm not diminishing what the work it's doing. I'm just hoping it could do more.
Do you want to respond specifically to that?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead, Dirk. Deputy Executive.
Sorry, I forgot to introduce myself. I'm Joanna Contreras, Deputy County Executive for Housing. Just to elaborate on that, we are looking at exactly that question much later on. That's why we had a meeting earlier today, because we are trying to figure out if there's a way that we can implement that state program. If there's a county program that we can design that can catch the folks who are not eligible for that program. Or whatever, for whatever reason. But one of the things that became clear, we're still definitely interested in doing that. One of the things that became clear in our meeting today was how, complex it is. Like, it's a sobering number, right? It's $500,000 to $400,000 and it's serving 15 people right now. So if we were to do a county version, it could possibly be around the same scale and helping around the same people. And so how long, all these questions come up. How long is the right length of time? How many people do we want to serve? What's the income threshold? How much in the rent is an appropriate amount to pay? So we're wrestling with all those questions because we do want to do everything that we can to address the issue. And then on the broader topic, I know that you're planning on forming a housing subcommittee. One of the things that Planner Doyle mentioned on his way out was that we would like to offer to do a presentation on all of the initiatives that we're doing on housing, from homelessness prevention to the trying to create new housing and everything in between, so that we can, since we have a few new people, so we can all hear at the same time some of the things that we're working on.
Thank you.
Thank you. I've got Legislator Harmon next to Paul Bettelkeller.
Thank you.
Legislator Harmon.
So my question is about the method by which we move people from this seemingly very emergency-based program to more sustainable things like Section 8. Crisis intervention is wonderful, right? But do we have a specific mechanism for folks in this program so that we move them on to more long-lasting?
Well, households that would be involved in applying for this program, in the event they become eligible, they're on the radar with police management by a provider that is Catholic Charities. So there's limitations to a program like this. And just kind of following up on what Deputy County Executive Contreras said, a number that got thrown out this afternoon is if you assisted 20 households and provided them with $2,000 per month for 1 year, that's about $500,000. That's how quickly that money gets expended. And the intervention hopefully takes place at the point where they're facing a crisis. So it gives them stability going forward for a year. It also creates the opportunity to see if they might be able to be connected to something like a Section 8 grant or an ESHI grant. You can also look at whether or not they would be eligible for a shelter benefit. It kind of depends on the income and resources coming into the household. The other thing that we have great expectations for in our county are some of the affordable housing projects that are in the pipeline. Right now, that's one of the major obstacles. There's not a lot of affordable housing inventory. There's not a lot of workforce housing inventory. But if a program like this helps sustain a family for another year, then we can possibly develop a program that complements this and continues to sustain a family. Maybe they get through this year and next year, and then when there's affordable housing units that become available pursuant to the projects that are being undertaken, then the income that they have would position them to possibly transition. I mean, it's very hard in a free market economy where landlords are going to potentially seek out the highest rent they can charge to arrive at manageable amounts. So you're absolutely right. households that we engage for a program like this are going to certainly be in a crisis at that point. They might also have 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 months of arrears that we're trying to resolve. And that can encourage the landlord to continue to remain in a lease agreement with them going forward. So the whole goal here is to keep them from becoming emergency homeless, which is the most urgent of crises. So we're trying to attack it from every potential direction that we can. And if we can qualify a household for a program like this, we can be working closely with them going forward to try to identify what's the next potential program or option that would be available to them.
Can I follow up? Thank you. So has anybody tracked the number of work hours it takes for a person who is in this position, needing this program, to have their eligibility assessed and maintained? Right? Like, is it a heavy lift? Is it an easy lift? What's the requirement?
I guess I'll go in the middle. It's probably a medium lift, but a service provider like Catholic Charities, who has expertise in gathering information like this, can certainly, and they have demonstrated over the past couple of years, it's actually an interesting question because it was a question that they provided us with some insight about. That time is expended. It's not an unmanageable amount of time for them to do this. And they certainly provide support to the applicant, where it's also not unmanageable or impossible for the applicant.
That's my question.
Yeah, so it is not an undertaking that's done without enough support. Catholic Charities has a long history of providing programming like this. They were involved in, during the COVID pandemic, administering what was then called an emergency solutions grant to households to help them with their rent, and then there was the Emergency Rental Assistance Program, ERAP, and they assisted both applicants who were tenants and landlords in terms of applying. It does take time. You know, there has to be identification of a candidate, engagement, and you know, relationship has to be built. But hopefully the benefits of doing that arrive at being deemed eligible for this program or some other kind of assistance.
Thank you.
And just to add to that, one of the things that we're doing this year, the Department of Social Services called the Housing and Homelessness Unit, and there will be 3 people in the unit, but we're building into their job descriptions that they'll be really hands-on. Okay. So like if somebody actually needs help filling out an application, they'll be expected to actually to help with that, because we know that that is a huge barrier. For some folks, like, it's hard to fill out applications, it's hard to find your paperwork, especially if you're in crisis, you know, applications are readily available. So we do want to be responsive to being supposed to be hands-on help.
Thank you.
Any other questions, please? I will entertain a motion to adopt resolution number 34. Moved by Senator Pollard and seconded by Legislator McCullough. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Resolution number 35, approving the execution of a contract for $150,000 entered into by the county with Ulster County Community Action Committee, Inc. through the Department of Social Services. Again, Commissioner Iacocci, if you want to give us a brief overview.
Sure. This is a program that we started in 2022, continued last year, and are moving forward with again this year. This is Ulster County Community Action, the provider, and what they do is they visit all of the hotels and motels where we place emergency housing clients twice a month to check in on those households and individuals to see how they're doing in terms of their food and hygiene needs. And they also develop a rapport and have conversations with our clients who are in those placements just to try to ensure that those basic needs are being met. They also visit twice a week a provider that we use in Greene County, the Rainbow Cabins and Motels, and they visit that location twice a week because there's nothing really nearby that location that's close enough for clients that are placed there. So they visit twice a week to provide, again, food and hygiene items. And, you know, this has been something that became increasingly apparent as a gap area. That's why we implemented this program in 2022, because what we were experiencing and continue to experience is households spending longer periods of duration in emergency housing placements. And that's a result of, again, the fact that we're, you know, experiencing difficulty with having adequate affordable housing inventory. So it used to be in Ulster County pre-COVID that households would go into emergency housing and experience a placement that lasted for 2 or 3 months. They were able to find somewhere else to move to that was affordable. Now we're seeing families in the emergency homeless placement for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, because there's nowhere to move to. There's no inventory and there's nothing affordable. So the challenges that those households face in these placements for these long periods of duration was the reason that motivated us to be doing more engagement. That's why we arrived at this service with Ulster County Community Action.
Yep, legislative comments.
How many households do we have in emergency housing placement?
This month, we have 485 unique individuals in emergency housing and a total of about 230 cases. And that was spread across 20 different hotels and motels in Ulster County, Greene County, Orange County, and Dutchess County.
Legislative McCullough.
At the Kingston Motel, formerly known as Sky Top, there's a representative from Ulster County that at the desk with the worker for the hotel. Is that one of your people or is that another program?
No, that's one of our staff.
Okay, and from 10:30 to noon every
two
okay.
people that are located on site at the Kingston Motel from 10:30 to 12, and they're social welfare examiners.
Okay.
And their responsibilities are to process the applications and the recertifications and be available to the clients who are placed at that location to answer any questions or concerns that they have.
Which are the comments?
So you said 485 people, 230 cases. Is that because, is that all there are, or are there more cases that just don't show up?
There are the cases we have. I can't speak to cases that don't show up. I can tell you that those numbers fluctuate daily.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we arrive at tracking data and generate a monthly average, which we share with other entities. But as experience has demonstrated to us over the history of providing emergency housing services, it's a very fluid situation, and it fluctuates literally day to day. And it also depends on the number of households and individuals and couples that are coming into our system and also leaving. So, you know, we had a high watermark last year in October of around 511. That's been happening to me all day today. When I'm talking about something, which is a good sign. Maybe I should be talking less. But at any rate, so it's data that we track very closely because we try to really stay on top of it. Because every single day at the Department of Social Services Emergency Housing Unit, we start immediately in the morning contacting our providers to see what inventory is available. We're in touch with our clients to see if their circumstances are changing. Now, sometimes they can leave emergency housing placement because they did arrive at a place to live, or maybe they're returning to live with a friend or family, or maybe they're leaving the county, they've decided to go elsewhere. At the same time, we might have people coming into our lobby who just recently lost their housing because their lease ended. They are no longer able to remain living where they were. So it really fluctuates day to day. But, you know, these are averages that we've been able to arrive at being able to manage pretty effectively. And We always are doing our best to be prepared every day to meet whatever the demand is. And then Family of Woodstock is our after-hours provider. So we always communicate with them at the end of the business day about what we're seeing. And then overnight, they communicate with us first thing in the morning about how many people contacted them during the evening.
What did you want to respond to that?
Just very, very quickly, the difference, I don't know if this is what you were asking, but the difference between the number and the cases is that one case can be a family.
What percentage of people in emergency housing through Ulster County are housed in Ulster County? And I'm going to, for consistency's sake, how onerous is the process of that certification and recertification for emergency housing?
The process is not onerous at all.
Okay.
We're in almost daily contact with a lot of our emergency housing clients. And based on the length of duration that many of them are currently experiencing, and the realities about the fact that there just are not really any available options, it happens without any kind of delays or difficulties. With respect to the percentage, it varies. I'd say right now we're in a place where probably 80% of our emergency homeless population is placed in Ulster County, in the motels that we use in Ulster County and our shelters. Now, we'll always have a percentage in Greene County, at the Rainbow Motels and Cabins. And the reason we make placements there is we have large families there, and OTDA's emergency housing occupancy requirements require sometimes that we use facilities that have multiple rooms. Mm-hmm. We have room limitation. So we'll always have a certain percentage at that location, but it fluctuates, but I'd say generally about 80%. You know, we also try to make placements in a manner that's consistent with ensuring that the household's other activities are taken into consideration, school district their children may be attending, where they work, where they're getting treatment. So that's something, and that's why with a large geographic county like Ulster, we have motels and hotels that we use in every municipality.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Any discussion? So with that, I will ask for a motion to adopt resolution number 35. Moved by McCullough. Okay. Seconded by Collins. Wonderful. Got the new members. They're in their feet. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Right. And our last resolution, this is resolution number 37, the Office of Aging approving the execution of a contract amendment for $40,000, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000 at Gingerbread County with Pure Foods LLC doing business as Mom's Meals for the Office of Aging. And I will defer to Director Copenhaver to give us an overview.
As you knew, I'm Sue Copenhaver, the Director of the Office for Aging. And if you have any questions, always feel free to contact me. But the Mom's Meals contract is something we've had for a number of years. It's a continuation of our contract. And we offer Mom's Meals to people who either cannot or do not like our regular food purveyors' home-delivered meals. So Mom's Meals offers them more restrictive diets that they need on, renal diets, things like that, that our regular purveyor just cannot produce. So we offer them that alternative so they can choose that. Yes.
Are the meals hot or?
So the Mom's Meals are actually called quick chill. Mm-hmm. They're delivered cold, and they're delivered to for a 2-week period at a time. The other meals that we deliver with Gateway, because I know that some of you are new, are frozen. And we used to deliver them hot, but when the pandemic hit, we immediately switched to frozen because, number one, we didn't want the daily contact, and number two, people didn't want people coming to their house. You know, there was a lot of reasons. And surprisingly enough, people are okay with the meals the way they are. They can get them once a week. They can heat them when they want. If it gives them more freedom, it gives us more freedom. So it's working out pretty well.
Any other questions? And I will ask for a motion to adopt resolution number 37.
It's a point for me.
Yes, it is your turn. Just played a harm and second my life. Y'all are doing great. I'm really stoked. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. I did miss one important thing at the beginning. I forgot to ask for a motion to approve the December 7th minutes, which only a handful of us were here for. I will do that now, so we don't have to do it twice next month.
Motion.
All right. Second. Moved by Corcoran, second by Lopez. Any discussion on the minutes from December 7th? All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, those are adopted. The one item of new business that I wanted to discuss before we adjourn is, as Deputy Executive Kirst mentioned in her earlier comments, we are going to be establishing a housing subcommittee. The vision is really for there to be a single place that all housing discussion can happen.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the housing topics that we, resolutions that we deal with will bounce between various committees. It's good for there to be a single basically a single source of conversation around that. So those that are interested, and I suspect probably many people might be interested, please email me if you're interested in serving on that committee. We'll send out a reminder. I'll either send it or I'll ask Michael or Jay or someone to send it. But we want to get that rolling in the weeks ahead. So please, if you're interested in serving on that subcommittee, and I already know some of you who are, please reach out and just give me a heads up. With that, I will, we don't have any old business, and I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
Motion.
Moved by Corcoran, seconded by Harmon. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, we will adjourn. Thank you all.
Yep, you got to step.